I don't know what Madman's lane speed record is.
All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 498 for Thursday, October the 20th, 1977. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you to be an asshole, because you never know who's having a good day and doesn't deserve it. Tonight, we have
advice.
We have an Are You? What's up, Are You?
I make sure my existence goes on to annoy others.
I might have stolen that joke from Static. And we have a madman. What's up, madman? Madman.
Madman ain't here.
Madman is not responding. Please press any key to continue.
Oh, damn it. Mute buttons suck whenever you're not, you know, using them correctly. So, yeah, that's kind of depressing. I assume people are cool until they prove to be assholes. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm proven wrong more often than I would like, but I find the world less depressing that way.
I mean, the world is a cold and disappointing place, so.
Yeah. Life is a sexually transmitted disease with a 100% fatality rate.
That's also very true. That is also very true. There we go. Anyways, so I guess we'll get started here. So I got bored during meetings day and started building a freaking Ergodox keyboard. So I've got it's assembled. I've just got to flash a firmware on it. But it's like, you know what? You know, instead of sitting there playing, what's the tower defense game? Or I had a few others I was rotating through on my phone for really boring meetings. Working the soldering iron and building a keyboard is actually not that bad as far as, you know, things to do when meetings get really boring because a couple of people on a different team have decided to start rolling around on the floor. So, yeah, I don't, it's, you know, if you're working from home and, you know, it's not a bad way to go if you can pop out the soldering iron and sit there and knock out a project or two while you know, listen to two different teams argue about policy.
So. Well, were you at least fortunate enough to be included in meetings where you were needed, or at least it was appropriate for you to be there?
I complain about being in meetings a lot, but honestly, the majority of them, for at least a portion of the meeting, I should have been there. Maybe not the whole thing, and usually not with the answer that they want to have, because the answer is usually, can't we do nothing and get away with it? It's no, it does not work that way. Well, we don't want to spend the money. Well, sorry to hear that. That's not what this policy says. So, but like every time, and I mean every time, it's always, well, do we have to do that? Yes, we do. It's like, can we just, like, you know, not fix the holes in the network and just kind of hope? Can our security policy be based on hope? No. just no.
Why not? Most of our companies are.
Yeah, well.
I would like it to be based on hope, sir, but unfortunately, we have fiduciary responsibilities not to be stupid.
You know,
damn morality.
I would love to, you know, count on the kindness and the respect of other people would have for our property. But as we've just reminded people, people are assholes just to make sure somebody else isn't having a good day undeservedly. So, oh shit. Anyways, so let's get into this first article here. It's from Vice. Ring cameras are being used to control and surveil overworked delivery workers. And Madman, you and I were talking earlier, so you know why this story caught my attention. So, networked doorbell surveillance cameras like Amazon's Ring are everywhere and have changed the nature of delivery work by letting customers take on the role of bosses to monitor, control, and discipline workers, according to a recent report by the Data and Society Tech Research Institute. The Data and Society Tech Research Institute. I should have done this before the show. I'm going to Google that name because I'm worried it might be two guys in a fax machine. Oh, well, two guys in a fax machine and a website. So let's see. Blog, newsletter, follow us on Twitter. So it's got a board. Who all, does it list who's on its board? It's a bunch of articles. Let's see. Maybe it's under the about. Convene researchers, policymakers, technologists, journalists. I got to stop using that word, are you? One of these marketing dipshits just ruined it. Let's see. Academic rigor with creative outreach. Okay, yeah, sure you do. Where's your fucking board? Just want to see who's on it. Well, they've actually got annual reports out. All right, well, it's... Let's see. I don't see anywhere what this... You know, if I had the time to really dig in, which is why I should have done this before the show, we could figure out if this Data and Society Research Institute is actually worth a damn.
Yeah, they were created in 2004. They're located in Budapest, Hungary. You keep reading the story, Mops. I'll fill you in if there's anything sus.
I was going to say, because it's like, is this another one of these, you know, cushy boards that takes a bunch of donation money, distributes it out to a few people, and occasionally puts out a paper to generate a headline? I don't know. Anyways, quote, the growing popularity of Ring and other networked doorbell cameras has normalized home and network surveillance in the name of safety and security, unquote. Data and Society's Labor Futures Program Director, Aya Nugen, and research analyst, I'll need more alcohol to read this correctly, Eve Zelkin write, quote, but for delivery drivers, this has meant their work is increasingly surveilled by the doorbell cameras and supervised by customers. The result is a collision between the American ideas of private property and the business imperatives of doing a job, unquote. What's private property have to do with seeing whether or not the delivery driver bothered to ring the doorbell before sticking the little note on the door, or, you know, whether they chucked your package across the lawn? You know, we've seen all of this.
No conflict in that.
It's like, that's got nothing to do with private property, and just, well, unless you count the, you know, destruction of your property when they decided to, you know, shot put your package across the yard so they didn't have to go all the way up to the door. Or, like, the one I like is where you see the delivery drivers just hucking it over a fence or, like, drop kicking the box. I mean, they are funny.
As I would often guarantee while working retail, ma'am, this box will not be dropped more than once nor kicked more than twice.
Thanks to interviews with surveillance camera users and delivery drivers, the researchers are able to dive into a few major developments, including interacting here to bring this to a head. Obviously, the first one is the widespread adoption of doorbell surveillance cameras like Ring. Just as important as the adoption of these cameras, however, is the rise of delivery workers and its transformation into gig labor. The popularity of networked doorbell surveillance cameras was not an inevitable outcome, but a development that companies like Amazon have cultivated through a variety of well-documented methods. The company has spent years stoking suburban paranoia, then offering Ring surveillance cameras as a salve. It has partnered with police departments, at least 2,000 as of this summer, to offer Ring cameras for free or at a steep discount. Ring surveillance cameras are offered at a discount during Prime Day, the pagan holiday celebrating Amazon's consumption cult. I love the way this guy's writing this shit. The company even launched a Ring surveillance footage TV show. Each of these methods has also been part of the company's monopoly speed run, which has shifted commerce away from physical brick-and-mortar stores to e-commerce and delivery workers. I think a pandemic may have helped, and... I really enjoy that You know, they're saying that, you know, Ring has been stoking suburban paranoia for years to sell their product, which is probably true. I mean, if you go back and look historically, a lot of our, way more of our culture came out of marketing campaigns than you would think. The whole idea that you're supposed to use a diamond wedding ring, yeah, you can thank De Beers for that in the 1920s.
Santa Claus being wearing a red suit.
Coca-Cola.
That's Coca-Cola.
They did not invent.
Traditionally, he wears gold and white. Green. He was.
It's green, wasn't it?
If you go German, but the older ones, he's a bishop.
Yeah.
This is in bishop's colors.
But, yeah, there's a lot of ideas in our culture today that just seem like the way things are that came from marketing campaigns. So, you know, uh-oh, what did RU find? Oxford Institute.
That's the partners.
They're partnered with the Oxford Institute, the University of China, Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism, Stanhope Center for Communications Policy Research, Internews Network, IE University Spain, the World Bank, USC Annenberg. Yeah, I kind of figured.
They had a rebranding 2004. To their latest adoration, which is Center for Media Data and Society. That's the one. They previously were known before that as the Center for Global Communications Studies.
Okay.
They partnered with some pretty shady motherfuckers, like the Iranian media programs, Jordan media.
So I kind of figured from reading when I was skimming the article earlier that it's like this is kind of hyped up. You know what I mean? This seems like it's overblown. But I also thought it was worth talking about, and I really should have looked at the institution putting out the research. And to, you know, of course, I didn't think of it until just now.
Man, if I had a week to prepare, I probably could have come back with a. Don't listen to these guys. They're in bed with the International Monetary Fund. And,
well, I mean, they got the World Bank in their partners list. So.
Every other shit. Well, dude, they partner with fucking, yeah, all your Middle Eastern favorites that have loved to be bombed by the Americans. But, yeah, once they're fucking around with the World Bank and IMF and that, you don't want anything to do with them.
But well,
I'd love to know why they had to rebrand.
Probably because they just wanted more money, and if they said they're now including media, you know, internet and media or whatever. But anyways, let's keep going with this because it does have some points I think are kind of fun to talk about, if nothing else. As the report lays out, Ring cameras allow customers to surveil delivery workers and discipline their labor by, for example, sharing shaming footage online. This dovetails with the gigification of Amazon's workers in two ways, labor dynamics and customer behavior. Okay. Right here, I'm going to stop. If I have a security camera set up and I'm not happy with the way a delivery was handled, say they shot put the package across the yard, I'm probably not going to be trying to shame Lloyd what's-his-name, the delivery driver, even though that's probably the person who deserves it. I'm going to be trying to shame the name on the uniform Lloyd is wearing. And it's like, wow, look how UPS treats their shit, right? Or look how an Amazon delivery driver, I don't know if you'll actually be able to tell they're Amazon. I know they used to have their own trucks. I don't know if they still do or not. Or look what the Postal Service, it's not, I don't think you're shaming the drivers. I think you're shaming the companies. Now, sure, the companies will see that footage and go find the driver and, you know, be upset about it. But I would rather, I at least that's my view on it. I mean, what do you guys think? I mean,
no, you have the right to point out this dude's doing a bad job, and this is also one of the ways you tell whether or not it's a decent company. Are they going to be correcting the problem?
Yeah. So
if they correct the problem, they're a decent company. Every company is going to hire idiots, because idiots apply for jobs.
But it's like that delivery you and I were talking about earlier, Madman, where I had ordered a fairly pricey piece of radio equipment. And, you know, I had also ordered some 3D printer stuff at the same time. Well, the radio equipment was signature required. The printer stuff was not. So I get an email that the printer stuff was delivered. I'm like, huh, They were both scheduled for, you know, they were scheduled for UPS today. I figured they would have, you know, both been on the same truck. So I go downstairs because, you know, I'm working from home at the moment and, you know, look out and there's the box with the 3D printer stuff in it and a little note on the door saying signature required for, it's like, I was home. I never heard the doorbell. I would have heard him knock. I didn't happen to have headphones on for the, you know, past 45 minutes or whatever. It's just like, I would have heard you, but, you know, apparently not. So I don't think they knocked. I know they didn't ring the doorbell because I hear that through the whole house. But later tonight I was eating dinner and the driver swung back by and let me sign for the package and I got my radio part tonight. And I was upset about it because I was thinking I was going to have to go to the UPS pickup center and, you know, the last time that happened, it was like 2 or 3 days later. So it's like, well, I'm not going to be able to get this till Saturday. So it's like, that sucks. I mean, it's not an actual problem. It's just obnoxious. You know what I mean? So.
These board members.
Did you find it?
Yep.
Nice. Let's see if there's any obvious names on there.
None that I can see in the head of it. His Wikipedia page isn't even in English. Get out of luck there.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you see on the boards, like, you know, and, you know, special member Bill Gates and shit like that. So it's like,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm still looking for the,
I piqued RU's interest in digging into this board, this org. But, yeah, consider Amazon's Prime program, which created its promise of near instantaneous delivery, an immediate logistics problem for Amazon. In response, the company created an on-demand delivery driver workforce, Amazon Flex. Unlike other labor platforms, Uber and DoorDash, Flex drivers are classified as independent contractors and are denied overtime pay, paid sick leave, unemployment insurance, and the standard labor rights or protections. In exchange, they were given freedom to have variable pay, to cover their own vehicle maintenance, and to find their own health insurance and risk their bodies. Yeah. I think Amazon stopped doing a lot of the Flex stuff because the last couple of things I've ordered off Amazon just come through the post office, and Prime or not, these things are not showing up fast. I'm actually getting kind of annoyed with them because they've been losing deliveries and, you know, shit like that. So, I've been trying.
The post
I've been actively,
office is.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I'm actively trying to find other places to buy stuff before I go buy it on Amazon at this point, just because I'm getting that annoyed with them.
Well, Amazon's been keeping the post office lucrative for a while. They've been their primary mode of delivery since Amazon was just selling books.
So, quote, gig workers, including Flex drivers, are sold on the promise of flexibility, independence, and freedom. Amazon tells Flex drivers that they have complete control over their schedule, can work on their teams, or on their terms, and in their space, Nugent and Zyklinson wrote. Quote, through interviews with Flex drivers, it became apparent that these marketed perks have hidden costs. The drivers often have to compete for shifts, spend hours trying to get reimbursed for lost wages, pay for wear and tear on their vehicle, and have no control over where they work, unquote. Oh, is Amazon not even covering wear and tear on the vehicle? That's kind of shit. I mean, if they're making you drive for them under contract. Although I guess Uber and DoorDash probably don't do that either, do they?
It's considered part of their net pay.
Yeah.
And at least with DoorDash, whether or not it's worth doing greatly depends on where you are and how many dashers there are. I know some that have pulled $40 and $50 an hour, which isn't bad where I am. And others, if there's a lot of dashers, good luck making minimum wage.
Well, I tell you, I've quit using DoorDash around here too because, again, same problem with Amazon, just too many problems with it. You know, problems with the food and you basically can't get it resolved or they give you, you know, a partial refund and they don't even give you much opportunity to talk with them and say, like, the chicken Alfredo had no chicken in it. It cost $12 and you offered me a $4 refund. Don't you think that's a bit out of whack for it missing the main part of the meal? So, yeah, I don't. I've really been trying to cut back on a lot of these web services because a lot of them just suck. You know,
Well,
it
with
gets
the
old.
DoorDash, a big chunk of what you're paying isn't actually the cost of food. I've compared it to actual what's in the restaurant, and they're getting close to doubling the price on a lot of stuff.
I don't do DoorDash anymore. I mean, I used to use it a lot, and I've just, they fucked up too many orders, and I just said the hell with this. So, but on top of that, well, one, it's probably healthier for me to, cook every once in a while. But on top of that, you're right about it being more expensive. But I noticed too, occasionally I'll order like a, still order a pizza, right? And I've noticed a lot of the delivery chains. The person showing up isn't wearing a delivery chain, shirt and having a little magnetic sign on the roof of their car. And I looked it up and it's like, yeah, the last time I ordered from Papa John's and just some random dude delivered it. And it's like, huh, that's weird. Yeah, no, Papa John's is contracting out to DoorDash to do their deliveries. They're not doing their own deliveries anymore. I don't know if all the chains are doing that, but I definitely know Papa John's in this area is. And it's like, the fuck? So, I don't know. Anyways, let me get to the meat of the article here because it keeps going. Here we go. Amazon already surveils its Flex drivers by spying on closed Facebook groups, but sought to add surveillance cameras in delivery vehicles over safety concerns from its labor conditions created. The move won't change anything, but will introduce tighter, more algorithmic control over workers who are recruited, promises of flexibility and independence, a promise familiar to anyone who's spent time looking at working in the gig economy. Amazon's introduction of surveillance cameras to doorsteps works along similar lines, allowing customers to do their best impersonation of a boss that expects workers to listen and obey or suffer the consequences. Again, I don't actually intend to berate the worker. I want to berate the company if I'm pissed at them for a bad delivery. It's just interesting how the article is passing it off like, oh, it's all going back on the workers. And it's like, no, it's not Bob driving Amazon Flex. It's fucking Amazon I'm going to be pissed at if the delivery's bad. Maybe that's what this article is really trying to do, is say, oh, no, it's the employees. It's not the company, which is about the biggest shit move I can think of. Yeah, not only do customers get, okay, back to the article. Not only do customers get notification prompts to track or monitor, but also believe it, quote, encourages virtuous behavior, unquote, as well as ensures workers, or quote, workers behave in a certain way on their property, unquote. When it comes to instruction, customers are, quote, emboldened to correct and instruct delivery workers because the activity takes place on their property with the doorbell camera they can see in real time from any location, unquote. Even when such requests, interpreted as orders, are unreasonable ones which clash with the driver's other responsibilities, i.e., making other deliveries on time. Customers were also open about how the use of surveillance cameras encouraged them to penalize drivers more, whether reporting them to Amazon, alerting law enforcement, or sharing footage online to shame them. All of these forms of customer behavior are, for the most part, indistinguishable from various forms of workplace management. I don't know about that. Again, it's look what my Amazon delivery driver did, not look what Bob did, you know. As Nguyen and Zickelson point out, it is ingenious how Amazon has, quote, managed to transform what was once a labor cost, i.e., supervising work and asset protection, into a revenue stream through the sale of doorbell cameras and subscription services to residents who perform the labor of securing their own doorstep, unquote. The report's conclusion is clear. Amazon has deputized its customers and made them part of a scheme that encourages antagonistic social relations, undermines labor rights, and provides cover for a march towards increasingly ambitious monopolistic exploits. Fucking wow. That's what the other reason why I was, curious about where this article came from or where the report came from, because it's very much like, look how beaten down the poor workers are. Look how beaten down the poor workers are. It's like even the customers are being like robber baron bosses, and it's just I mean, it's so over the top.
I don't know of anyone with doorbell cams that do that. At most, you get the complaint of, I was home, and they didn't knock.
That's my usual complaint. And again, you see the occasional video online of somebody, you know, shot putting the box across the lawn. But, I mean... Or, you know, like the guy's chucking him over a fence and drive. I think there was one. It was probably fake, but it looked like the delivery driver just driving by a property and hucking a box while the van was moving over a fence.
Yeah, on some of those, I do question whether or not it's actually real. Now, if they have the actual Amazon car, maybe I'll believe that one.
Yeah.
But I do know not all Amazon delivery dudes have the Amazon car.
Yeah, they're just it's like an Uber or a DoorDash. They're just working out of their own car. And I will say, you know, I've been lucky enough to be fairly steady in my career. I've never considered having to do gig economy work. And I imagine if you're in a situation where you're just, you know, burning up your own vehicle, running it into the ground, doing this kind of stuff to make ends meet. Yeah, I can see why that wouldn't be a particularly envious position to be in. Again, that, you know, the whole wear and tear on the vehicle thing. So, I don't know. Although I actually do end up with similar conversations about people doing the whole BYOD thing, since we require people to set up a mobile app at work for multi-factor, and some people say they don't want to use their personal phone for that, and then it goes round and round, so. I don't know. I mean, using the phone I don't think incurs the same kind of wear and tear as driving a car, but... Anyways.
On that one, it just comes to... Do you think you should have complete control over what's on your phone? Like, you're requiring me to have this specific app? Hand me my phone that you want that app on.
Well, I guess for me, part of it is half of the main reason I have a cell phone is to do work stuff. So it doesn't really occur to me that that's a problem because I'm not doing a whole bunch of not work stuff on my phone these days, you know?
I could see that back in the days when everyone had a landline, but I have a cell phone because it is my phone. Now, I may also work on it because I have a job, but it's my phone.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point too. So, I don't know. Are you thoughts on this before we move on?
I've been too busy digging into these assholes, man. Yeah, they're harder to find than Osama bin Laden in most counts. But when you do track them down, they're involved with everyone, man.
Like, yeah, it does kind of have that.
The stop hate fucking thing. We're currently trying to stop advertising in newspapers. Yeah, they're tied in with NGOs everywhere. People mightn't actually be, they're on the board of this company, but when you check into what their other stuff they do, they're all up in the protest movements, the climate change, stop white supremacists, save Greta Thunberg, just everything you could think of, cyberbullying, they're all involved with all of those. And I'm pretty sure if I keep going, I'm going to find the Open Society somewhere in here.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah,
they're
on that board, right?
Yeah,
they work for this company, but then in their other, when they're not doing work for this company, they're in all the other NGOs as well. So they're hanging out with the Gates Foundation, shit like that. They all know each other.
I mean, it reads like the whole "oh pity the workers," though, doesn't it? So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it kind of fits these with are that worldview.
These are trust fund kids, man. That's all they are. But none of them seem to have a wiki on there. daily lives.
Gee, imagine that.
I know, right? Imagine my shock. And I'm seeing a lot of stuff tied to Hungarian politics. And for some reason, these people really enjoy writing fan fiction of some sort. Like, three of them I've found that have written fan fiction.
Yeah, oh, see, that's funny.
I've only, out of all the board members, only two of them had any Wikipedia stuff, and it wasn't in English. Like, this chick here is a fucking ghost. Like, the last dude, Leo Watkins, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
That motherfucker is a ghost. I mean, he's better hidden than I am. Like,
all right.
Shit.
Well, let's move on to this next one. This next one's just fun. It's from darkreading.com. Once limited to abstract academic conversations among cybersecurity enthusiasts, I guess I fall in that camp of cybersecurity enthusiasts. It is my day job, but I mean, sure, why not? Drones loaded with cyber spying equipment are now being used in the real world to breach networks and steal information. Cybersecurity researcher Greg Linares shared a Twitter thread on October the 10th, providing an overview of a drone-based cyber attack he was privy to over the summer. He explained it started with an unnamed financial company picking up unusual traffic on its network. A trace of the Wi-Fi signal behind the network activity led the threat hunters to the roof, where two drones were found. One was a modified DJI Phantom carrying what Linares called a modified Wi-Fi pineapple device. The other was a likewise modified DJI Matrice 600 drone loaded with a Raspberry Pi, batteries, a GPD mini laptop, a 4G modem, and another Wi-Fi device he had. It's like, holy shit, they just duct tape all this shit to a... And that DJI Matrice, that's one of the bigger drones. That's the one that can actually carry a bit of a payload. But like the GPD mini laptop and a Raspberry Pi. It's like, geez, guys. The cyber attack was partially successful, allowing attackers to target the internal Atlassian Confluence page to get access to credentials and other devices. Do not store credentials on Atlassian Confluence pages, for the love of God. Use a password vault. Please. Do not store them in wiki pages, for God's sake. Linares said. However, the threat hunters found what... You have a company that has threat hunters, but they're letting people store passwords in Confluence, for fuck's sake. However, the threat hunters found one of the drones damaged, but still functioning. Quote, the attack was a limited success, and it appears that once the attackers were discovered, they accidentally crashed the drone on recovery, Linares tweeted. He explained that this sort of drone exploit delivery attack probably cost more than $15,000 to put together. Attackers are spending this range of budget in order to target your internal devices and are okay with burning it, he cautioned. This is the third real world drone-based attack I've encountered in 2 years. Okay, I think you could do with this for a lot cheaper than $15,000. Well, I don't know. That one, the bigger DJI drone might be, but the GPD is probably $1,000 on its own, but I don't think you needed a GPD mini laptop. I think you could have done this on the cheap for a lot less than that and still accomplished a lot. But yeah, they actually landed some drones on the roofs. Started running Wi-Fi pineapples and other shit to get into networks. That's great. I mean, that's not how I would have done it. I would have flown the drone over their building just to get their Wi-Fi information, and then started just doing the whole car metasploit thing in other places to get on their mobile devices and collect their credentials so that you could then fly back with the drone, get in with logins. And although maybe they did that, so I don't know, because they didn't really say what the attacks were on the digital side, just that they had all this shit strapped to a drone that they landed on the roof, which I think is awesome. So,
but the number of companies who just have footprints in office parks Why do you just don't pull up in a van and park outside for a little bit?
Well, somebody might see you pointing a freaking dish from your van at the... But yeah, no, you can... I mean, that's called war driving, madman. We've all been doing that since the 90s, so... I wanted a vehicle with a moonroof again to make make war driving easier in case I decided to do that again. Because it wouldn't be the first time I've driven around with a couple of magnet mount antennas on the roof of the car and a wire coming in through the freaking sunroof to... Oh, shit. Of course, you can do war driving these days with a freaking cell phone or a tablet. You don't even need... You used to need a laptop with a little GPS puck and specialty Wi-Fi gear. And nowadays, you do a freaking cell phone, so... whatever. I thought that was funny. Actually flying a drone and landing it on the roof to do Wi-Fi attacks. I guess the cyberpunk game is getting more and more predictive every day, isn't it?
Oh, somewhat. I don't think netrunners are going to be a thing, at least not the way it envisioned them.
Oh, they will be. They just won't nearly be that exciting. People are ghost in the shell, just dudes hanging out in a room with a bunch of screens around them. Lots of cats, and then I guess once you can buy them, you know, robotic sex toys.
Oh, you just made me sad.
Hey, Morbs, you know you're in the future when someone uses teledildonics to cheat at a chess competition. No, that's the future you are envisioned.
You've just strung words together that didn't really make a lot of sense, but okay. Teledildonics at a chess competition, huh?
Uh-huh. That's how the kid cheated.
What?
I'll tell you about it after the show.
Okay. I'm like, what, you know?
It's been a huge controversy in the world of chess. I'm sorry you don't follow such a high-paced sport as chess.
You're right. I'm sorry that I don't. I'm just trying to figure out what did like one buzz in the pocket meant moved this square. Two buzzes meant something else.
Further around from the pocket and slightly upwards.
Oh dear.
Yeah, you get the picture.
Unfortunately, yes.
Anyway, next story.
It's okay. I've got another. I've got a worse discovery to tell. Well, it's not a surprising discovery. It's just something, you know, things you find when you're Googling shit late at night because you can't sleep on an iPad. It's just like, wow, I didn't think that would exist. I mean, I'm not surprised that it exists, but I am kind of sad. So, I mean, it's not like they're gonna. I guess they're not. I guess they're not doing cavity checks at a chess competition.
Well, they will be now.
All right, Timmy, I understand you're going for Grandmaster. Bend over and think of England. Just for fuck's sake.
No. That's whenever they're going for a different master competition. This is bend over and cough. You don't have to think of England on this one.
We're going to feed you this laxative, and you're going to sit over this kiddie pool for a few minutes. Oh, for fuck's sake. This next article is from AdGuard.com. You may not be aware of it, but the work of every ad blocker is powered by filter lists. Lists of rules that tell the ad blocker exactly how it should block the ads. EasyList is a community-run project that maintains one of the world's most popular ad blocking filter lists. There are many popular lists. AdGuard Filters is one of them. But EasyList has always stood out as the most prominent and the most popular one. If you're using an ad blocker, there's a 99.99% chance you are using EasyList or one of its derivatives. At its core, EasyList is basically just a text file available at easylist.to/easylist/easylist.txt. However, if you try to download the file now, you see it takes about 5 minutes to do so because the file, even though the file size is not that big. A couple of weeks ago, EasyList maintainers saw a huge spike in traffic. The overall traffic quickly snowballed from a couple of terabytes per day to 10 to 20 times that amount. The source of that dramatic surge, it turns out, were Android devices from India. The whole situation rang a bell with AdGuard because last year they had to grapple with the very same problem. Last November, our bandwidth usage shot up through the roof for no good reason. After investigating the issue, we found out that two apps with ad blocking functionality were abusing the servers. What happened to AdGuard strikes a bears a striking resemblance to its now crippling EasyList. There's an open source Android browser, now seemingly abandoned, that implements ad blocking functionality. The browser is forked by a couple of other browsers that are very popular in India, and the problem is that this browser has a very serious flaw. It tries to download filter updates on every startup, and on Android that may happen lots of times per day. It can even happen when the browser is running in the background. When AdGuard encountered a similar problem last year, they found a simple solution. Block the undesired traffic from the apps. Even so, they continue to serve about 100 terabytes of access denied pages monthly. Holy shit! 100 terabytes of access... access denied page, just a 403 error monthly. Holy shit!
How many billions... or billions is that?
Your average error 403 is a couple of kilobytes. Oh my god!
Crap!
That's that good Indian programming for you, see?
That's like...
Because it's just constantly trying when it gets the denied page, isn't it?
Per day.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit! I mean, a 403, it might not even be a kilobyte. I mean, my God. Depending on how smart the server is, it may not even be serving up a page. It might just be that 403 response code, which means it's just the text of the packet. It's like, damn. EasyList is hosted on GitHub and proxied with Cloudflare. Unfortunately, Cloudflare does not allow non-enterprise users to use that much traffic, and now all requests to the EasyList files are getting throttled. EasyList tried to reach out to Cloudflare support, but the latter said they could not help. Moreover, serving EasyList may actually violate the Cloudflare terms of service. So the bottom line is, many ad blockers cannot download the filter updates because EasyList is throttled. EasyList may need to change the domain name. These faulty browsers will DDoS any hosting EasyList chooses as long as they continue to use the EasyList.to domain. Of course, AdGuard rehosts all filters lists on its own servers. If you use a different ad blocker, I don't know if anybody actually using AdGuard. I usually recommend uBlock Origin these days when somebody asks me for an ad blocker. That's the one I usually use.
It's just the easiest.
If somebody knows of a better one, please. I'm all ears, but that's the one I've been using for a couple of years now.
I mean, it works.
Yeah, it does. And pretty sure it's using EasyList.
Because I damn well know when it turns itself off. Holy shit.
It's unclear what EasyList should do now. It's a community project supported by volunteers that cannot afford to pay for the Enterprise Cloudflare plan. Should they start accepting donations for their invaluable work to fund hosting? This is easier said than done because they can change the domain name, but it's a rather painful procedure that will affect many other open source projects that rely on EasyList. If you're a security researcher can help find these Android browsers that DDoS easy and AdGuard, your help is appreciated. So they've got some stuff on here, but that's exactly what's happened is some open source browser that's not well written is just bombarding the thing, and it's phones in India doing it. I mean, that to me, that's where you just go, not even in your local servers, but you want to do it at a network level. You just, in this case, I guess Cloudflare, although they may not offer it to a non-enterprise, where you just say, block all traffic from India. I mean, fuck, I'm sorry, because I know that there's people in India who use the same plugins we use and don't abuse it, but that might be what you have to do to get these people who are just taking advantage and not contributing anything back to... notice. Because I'm sure they're not even thinking that they're abusing it. They're just like, oh yeah, here's the thing. We can just use it, They're not even thinking about it.
Unless they're getting a lot of complaints, they might not even know they have bad code. If it's working, do you go back and check? It's doing what I wanted it to do.
Oh, I remember... couple of years after I had started with the company, I remember getting in an argument with a developer because he wanted to understand why they kept running out of Salesforce. Their Salesforce limits the number of API calls you could make per minute, and they kept tripping it up. And I went in and I started helping them dig through their code. Now, I'll admit, I'm not a developer, but I can read fucking Java, right? And it's like, well, here's your problem. You're re-authenticating for every API call. So you're making about four times as many calls as you need to. You know, you just need to manage your API token and not disconnect and reconnect for every fucking, you know, call. And he said, no, that can't be it. We're not doing it that way. It's like, well, that's what's going on. And instead of fixing their code, they convince the business to increase their plan to get more API calls. It's like, for fuck's sake. So I'm sure that you've got developers out there who just don't understand what they're doing. They either don't think about it or they just don't understand the damage that they're causing by doing that, you know?
You know, it's like, well, they don't care.
Yeah. I honestly think the guy who I was arguing with was more embarrassed that I pointed out such a simple problem with their code than not understanding it or not caring it. I think he just, you know, didn't want to admit that they had made that kind of a mistake. Because, I mean, I understand what they were thinking. It's like, well, instead of having to manage a token, we'll just do this every time. It's like, yeah, but they limit your calls. You probably ought to just manage a token, so... Not that fucking hard. Anyways. So, next article. I believe you sent me this one. It's from Beeping Computer. Internet connectivity worldwide impacted by severed fiber cables in France. A major internet cable in the south of France was severed yesterday at 20:30 UTC, impacting subsea cable connectivity to Europe, Asia, and the United States, and causing data packet losses and increased website response latency. Cloud security company Zscaler reports that they made routing adjustments to mitigate the impact. However, users still face problems due to app and content providers routing traffic through the impacted paths, and of course, not everybody's going through Zscaler. Quote, Zscaler is working with content providers to have them influence their portion of the path, unquote, reads a notice from Zscaler. Quote, if you experience slowness with specific applications, especially hosted overseas, please contact the application provider and refer them to this trust post, unquote. The repair crews moved quickly on the scene but had to wait for the police to collect evidence before they were allowed to work on restoring the damage. At 2300 UTC, it was confirmed that the incident had impacted three links, Marseille's Lyon, Marseille's Milanto, and Marseille's Barcelona. I'm probably saying that name wrong. At 0100 UTC today, when Zscaler's repair crews restored one of the links, but the technicians continued observing packet loss and latency for some destinations. At 1858 UTC, Zscaler posted a final update saying the issue had been resolved. At the same time, BBC reports that a subsea cable linking the Shetland Islands to the Scottish mainland had been damaged too, leaving netizens on the islands isolated from the rest of the world. Not only that, but it reduced the capability of Shetland's population of 23,000 to call for emergency services, as communication had been impacted in general. Police Scotland has issued an advisory today urging people not to make unnecessary calls as the few available lines should remain open for emergencies. This incident comes as technicians were already working to fix the link between the Faroe Islands and Shetlands, which was also severed last week. Faroe Telecom's head of infrastructure, Paul Vesterblu, told the BBC that the cable cuts are believed to have been done by fishing vessels, though it's unusual to have two incidents simultaneously. Quote, we expect it will be fishing vessels that damage the cable, but it is very rare that we have two problems at the same time, unquote, Vesterblu told the BBC. Investigations into these recent incidents are still underway, and there is nothing at this time that indicates these acts are sabotage. Other than that's a lot of cables getting cut at the same time. So,
I wonder if they took down the no fishing signs.
Hey, man, undersea cables cut themselves all the time, bro. Well,
the reason this comes to mind is one of our better espionage actions was planting a bug on a Russian communications cable to one of their high up military bases. And the reason we knew where to place the bug is that we sent a sub around looking for no fishing signs on the coast, because that's where they were run a communications cable, and then we just dropped a bug on it. So some cables stopped being marked for that reason. So I wonder if either of those cables possibly weren't marked. I think the transatlantic one was probably marked because it sounded like a commercial cable. Like, completely commercial cable.
It sounds to me like a good
as any cable can be.
It sounds like to me like a good excuse to learn how to use a radio.
So. No, I'll just go outside. Fuck it. Call it a day and go outside.
Oh, I like the response, are you? That's great.
If MCI will start doing radio transmissions again for phone calls.
Fuck, the internet going down are probably the best thing to ever happen to me.
They used to have repeaters, and I guess some people are still running them. There's not any around here that would link up into the phone system. So, you know, like a lot of your radios, like you order a cheapy Baofeng radio off Amazon, you'll notice they can send DTMF codes. It's because you use those to control repeaters, and you used to be able to use them to make phone calls. Now, admittedly, your phone call was being broadcast unencrypted for anybody who bothered to listen on the repeater, but you could make a phone call on the radio. So,
I'd like to order a pizza. 30 people listening in on my order.
Sir, why do I hear Morse code? Don't worry about it.
Those are just a bunch of people trying to decide what military code we're using when I'm actually just ordering a pizza.
You just have one jackhole who keeps interrupting, and anchovies, you know. Oh, hell. Anything else on that one before we go to the next article?
Next up.
All right, next one is from Reuters. Texas has filed a lawsuit against Alphabet's Google for allegedly collecting biometric data of millions of Texans without obtaining proper consent, the Attorney General's office has said in a statement on Thursday. The complaint said that the companies operating in Texas have been barred, or it said that companies operating in Texas have been barred for more than a decade from collecting people's faces, voices, or other biometric data without advanced informed consent. Quote, in blatant defiance of the law, Google has, since at least 2015, collected biometric data from innumerable Texans and used their faces and voices to serve Google's commercial ends, unquote. The complaint said, quote, Indeed, all across the state, everyday Texans have become unwitting cash cows being milked by Google for profits, unquote. There's a line. The collection occurred through products like Google Photos, Google Assistant, and Nest Hub Max, the statement said. Google said it would fight the lawsuit, saying that users of the services had the option to turn off biometric collection feature. Quote, A.G. Paxton is once again mischaracterizing our products in another breathless lawsuit, unquote, said Google spokesperson Jose Cassandra. Quote, we will set the record straight in court, unquote. Lawsuit is one of several filed by states against Google alleging unfair practices with regard to privacy. Arizona settled one in early October for $85 million. Texas, Indiana, Washington State, and the District of Columbia sued Google in January over what they called deceptive location tracking practices that invade users' privacy. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said in a statement that the, quote, indiscriminate collection, unquote, of such data, quote, will not be tolerated, unquote. You know, if all these states were actually trying to detect data privacy and not just going, ooh, money, I might be impressed by this. But I'm fairly certain they're just looking for Google to settle and give them a check.
I mean, possibly, but
I'd love to be wrong about that.
The only way it's going to change is suits like this. And how many individuals do you think can take on Google?
Well, depending on how hard it is to build a killdozer, that's a bad joke. I probably shouldn't make that joke, should I? It's like, I mean, how hard is it to pull a Fight Club, you know, at the end when he blows up all the servers with credit card information?
Harder than the movie made it out. By a lot.
By a lot. Yeah, that's probably true. Oh, geez, looking at the clock, we need to get moving here. You guys have anything else on that one?
No, I'm good.
All right. I'm going to nix that story. We're going to do this last article. This last one is from Apple Insider. Apple rumored to be testing macOS for M2 iPad Pro. A leaker has claimed that Apple is working on a version of macOS exclusive for the M2 iPad Pro, with it expected at some point in 2023. One of the leading complaints surrounding the iPad is the lack of desktop-class software support. There have been calls for Apple to port not just Final Cut Pro, but a full version of macOS to the iPad. Leaker Majin Bruce's sources have shared that Apple is working on a smaller version of macOS exclusively for the M2 iPad Pro. It's said to be codenamed Mendocino, and will be released as macOS 14 in 2023. Testing is being done with a 25% larger macOS UI, so it's suitable for touch. However, apps run on the product would still be iPad-optimized versions and not macOS ones. It's not clear why Apple would move the iPad to a macOS interface with a half step like this. Those clamoring for macOS iPad do so for the software more than the interface. Rumors about software testing should also be taken with a grain of salt. Very little, if any, detail ever leaks out about Apple's software plans. Rumors have been floating around about macOS on iPads for more than a decade, and rumors about the original iPad said that macOS was a possibility before that device's release. Also, Apple likely has versions of macOS running on iPads for internal testing and configuration. The leaker could have seen an iPad during a debug state rather than, you know, actual operating system. Okay, I'm going to stop right here. The article's not wrong in that almost every time a new iPad is announced, there's a rumor that you're going to get macOS on it or Xcode or, you know, for the long time, Final Cut Pro was the thing, and I think they did finally put a version of it out. I don't actually think you're going to get macOS on an iPad because that would completely kill any reason to buy the MacBook Air, or even in a lot of cases, even the MacBook Pro. You just buy an iPad, run macOS on it, and get all your tools. And the article is correct that the reason you'd want to do that is the software, not so much just the interface of macOS. So I think what this is I think this is an intentional leak by Apple, whether they fed it to somebody who's a known leaker, because they said it's a known leaker, or, you know, the whole thing's just controlled opposition. I think what they're actually trying to do is get people to go buy the M2 iPad. Because I don't know about anybody else who has an iPad Pro. Mine's getting on 3 years old. It's the one right before they swapped over the M1 chips for the Pros. I've got no reason to upgrade. I have not had anything that I've done on it feel slow or sluggish or feel like I need to get a new version, because everything on it's working fine. I've got no reason to upgrade. And I imagine there's a lot of people with, you know, earlier versions of the iPad Pro, especially if you bought the M1, they're looking at the M2 version and going, why? You know, the iPad OS is still basically the same OS as what's on a phone. Nothing is taking advantage of that CPU horsepower on an iPad that I'm aware of. I mean, okay, yeah, there's some video editing, and I know there's some things you can do to use that horsepower. Most apps don't, because they want to be compatible with the old iPads. They want to be compatible with the phones. So I think this is just Apple saying, oh, you might get macOS if you go buy the new iPad. I think that's what this is. And I don't think you will.
I don't think it'll be effective. And the reason I'm not sure and don't think it'll be effective is, if it's a rumor that's been with all of them, then anyone that cares about getting macOS is going to wait till it's official and it's actually stated.
That's when they're
going to buy it. So I don't think it would at least be successful in drumming up sales, because it's a persistence rumor. It's like, are we going to download Steam because the newest crap Half-Life is coming out? Well, there's been a rumor for that coming out for decades. And
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Yeah.
So, anyways. Are you? I'd asked if you have anything on that, but I know you despise Apple products, so.
I have no interest in Apple. I don't despise it. Okay. No, I don't despise it. I just have no interest in them.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, last thing I have for tonight is a interesting little write-up that I got off the NetSec subreddit. It's called wireless penetration testing, right? And so he's got a lot of information on here about how wireless networking, you know, Wi-Fi, how it actually works. The frequencies, how channels are spaced out. There's just a lot of information on here about Wi-Fi in general. Yes, it is focused on the idea of doing wireless penetration testing, and there's a lot of information on here and using various tools, finding hidden SSIDs, packet sniffing, you know, getting into open networks and some different attacks and things like that. You know, how to crack WEP is on here, for example. You'd be surprised there's still a lot of WEP in use out there, even though there really, really shouldn't be. But there's still a lot of devices that are WEP only because reasons. Mostly money related, I imagine. So, you know, then it gets into some of the more difficult, you know, some of the more advanced stuff near the bottom of the page, but it's still got a lot of really good information on just how Wi-Fi works. So if nothing else, it's worth looking at just for that. You know, whether or not you intend to actually go messing with Wi-Fi networks, just understanding what's going on with it, there's a lot of information there. So I think it's a nice little reference and definitely worth, you know, at least skimming through it and getting some ideas. That's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working up here decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, Psychros, Cyberlard, Madman, myself, Sardonyx, and the Soylent Bomb. Madman, closing thoughts.
The one suit that I think, well, it won't be a suit. It'll be a congressional action. I think Google might be stepping on enough toes that antitrust could be coming after them, depending on this next election cycle. And that will be interesting if it happens.
I could see that. I mean, Google definitely deserves... Google, Facebook, and Amazon all definitely at least deserve a little bit of... scrutiny under antitrust. I don't know about you guys, but I do think that that's probably a fair set. I mean, YouTube especially, there is not another competing video platform out there. I mean, yeah, there are other video platforms out there, but none of them are actually competing with YouTube right now because they don't have the audience, unfortunately, which really sucks. Are you closing thoughts?
I am going so far down the rabbit hole of these people.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that to you.
Oh, no, I did. I knew what I was going to find, and I found exactly what I thought I was going to get to. Yeah.
Freaking dossiers on all these people.
Dude, everything's fucking incestuous shit. They're all nepotism. That's how they're getting their jobs. Because they don't just sit on one board. They sit on multiple boards. All different things. Okay? And most of these companies didn't even exist until 2014.
Well, isn't that interesting?
And their devotion to climate change, killing Nazis, all your buzzword bingos, that they're all into that.
Yes, the great surge of Nazis that came up in 2014.
Didn't you know that? I just watched a small talk by one of these women at actually, America is not controlled by the deep state. It's controlled by a hidden cabal of Nazis.
Living on the dark side of the moon, right? With dinosaurs.
No, living in America. I mean, these people are having conferences talking like this and raising millions of dollars. One thing they all have in common is please donate today. We need your money urgently to fight hate. But I've climbed all over these websites. I can't find a definition for hate speech. Anyway.
Hate speech is whatever speech the people in power currently don't like.
Yep. And The information is starting to spread out from yesterday to different news agencies, so I don't think it'll be too long before it hit mainstream. But the ride's about to get good.
That'll be fun.
About to get good.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to play sound effects and close us out.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Everything is fine.
It's just naked, fat, black, crippled dykes are hard to find.
But shut up, Wesley.